All right, so we're going to talk now to two folks from Juniper, John Jameson, JJ, and Ben Eaton. And Eater. I'm sorry, Ben Eater. And why don't you tell us, not all of our listeners may know exactly who Juniper is and what you do, so why don't you start off talking a little bit about that?
Great. Yeah, so this is John Jameson. Juniper Networks is a provider of high-performance routing platforms. So we make everything from edge routers that you'd put typically on the edge of a campus, of a university campus for research and education applications, to T640 routers, which handle multiple 10-gig interfaces and is capable of handling OC768 40-gig interfaces when we start making them. So it's sort of everything from the extremely high-end for supercomputing applications, which is why we're glad to be able to participate in Cynet and be part of the supercomputing show, to what you consider relatively low speeds. Things like even T1 interfaces we've started making in our very small boxes.
So what exactly is your role here at supercomputing? I mean, of course you're involved in the expo, but also you're involved in the network here.
Right. So Cynet, which is the show network that's built by volunteers every year, connects all the booths throughout the show floor via our routers. There's a T640 router and a T320 router that are in the core of the network. And then on to wide area connections. I think there's something on the order of 17 10 gigabit connections coming into the show this year. Two-thirds of them run into the Juniper routers. And our routers are used not only to route traffic between exhibition booths for people doing demonstrations here on the show floor, but to also connect into the wide area back to the national labs and the universities that they came from so they can demo applications that they run at home here at the show. So it's kind of cool. You have like massively parallel computers back in the supercomputer centers crunching data, and then they'll do things like run high-resolution graphics display here to show the results of the program they're running. It's very exciting.
Okay, cool.
So the 640 you're saying handles a number of 10E ports. How many applications are for that right now?
So like how many customers do we have that buy? There's two types of customers that buy T640 routers with 10 gigabit interfaces in them. The majority of our customers are really large telephone companies, companies like Deutsche Telekom, MCI, thank you, NTT in Japan. So we sell globally. They use 10 gigabit interfaces, are usually OC192 SONET interfaces, to connect inside their backbone. So they'll use our T640 routers as their backbone nodes. The customer-facing ports are much slower, but in between cities, let's say connecting Denver to Chicago to New York, they'll run OC192 interfaces between T640 routers. So those are our phone company customers. The interesting thing about working with people that do supercomputing is they'll buy 10 gigabit interfaces to face their equipment, 10 gigabit Ethernet, right? So they'll have a network like TerraGrid, which the National Science Foundation is sponsoring, runs multiple four parallel OC192 interfaces from Chicago to Los Angeles, and then they fan out. So that's 40 gigabits of bandwidth across the country. And then they'll fan out to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and the San Diego Supercomputer Center on the West Coast with multiple 10 gig connections. And then on the East Coast, they go to Argonne National Labs and in NCSA in Illinois. And the idea is to try to have enough bandwidth so that instead of just having a network, you take these supercomputers and give them a backbone across the country that they can connect to. So it's more like a computer backplane, you can think of it, when you can start moving data around that fast. And so those are the supercomputing customers. So between the carrier end of our business, which is actually the largest part in supercomputing people, we have a lot of customers actually buying T-series routers and 10 gig interfaces.
Do you have a sense of what kind of applications people are running?
Oh yeah, it's really, and that again another reason it's so exciting for us to participate in the show and have people that use supercomputers as our customers, is the applications are really cool. So for instance, in Tokyo, Japan, at the University of Tokyo, there's a $50 million electron microscope. It's six stories high, the thing's massive. And in the past, if researchers wanted to use this, you know, you have to write a grant proposal and get time on it and pay for it. But then you've also got to take the researcher and maybe some graduate students and fly them all to Tokyo with their samples they want to look at, and they're going to use the microscope rather. So instead of doing that, now what they're able to do, using the TransPAC network, which is a joint U.S.-Japan funded link across the Pacific, is researchers can sit at a computer anywhere at a university in the United States and control the microscope from there. They just send the samples over. No one has to get on a plane and travel, so you can do a lot more research for cheaper. So that's called distance instrument control. And so for really expensive instruments like giant electron microscopes or telescopes, that's one big use for this network. Other people are doing things like moving massive amounts of data from one place to another. And so instead of having to write tapes and ship it, which can become logistically a nightmare because it's like petabytes of data, they can now ship them across these wide area networks that use our routers like the Abilene network.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a bunch of people like that, astronomy people and radio astronomy and also the particle accelerator people.
The physicists are the biggest movers of data. And some of this networks, like there's a link between USC and Southern California. Harvey Newman runs this project out of USC. He's a professor there. He's trying to move a bunch of data between CERN in Switzerland and USC. So they actually bought a 10 gig link between Switzerland and Southern California, which is actually becoming a lot cheaper now. It's affordable. They put our T320 routers on each end of them, and they can move massive amounts of data. So since the U.S. doesn't have plans to build a next generation particle accelerator, it's the next big accelerator is being built at CERN in Switzerland, we're going to be able to do experiments there without shipping people, ship data back here and process it on U.S. supercomputers. So it really extends the reach and the resources that U.S. Academics have access to. I mean, networking is making all this possible. It's cool.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think the big accelerator they were going to build in Texas, that Congress canceled the funding for it. But, you know, it's with these physics applications, it's kind of funny because on the one hand, you have some people that are looking for events that occur very, very infrequently and they generate, you know, a minuscule amount of data. And on the other hand, you have people that are generating just astronomical amounts of data.
Right, or looking for like a minuscule amount of data within this astronomical amount of data, right? Yeah, so they're always, these guys at USC are always setting records for how much data they've moved across a long distance, and they're using our equipment. So it's pretty cool, and it's good for a company like ours to have customers like these, besides the obvious point that we get to sell equipment, right? So we like to do that. But our company, the biggest part of our business is the large telephone companies like Deutsche Telekom, like MCI, like NTT. But a lot of their applications are a whole bunch of people at home doing web surfing, right? So what you've got is a ton of really small flows crossing the network, millions and millions of flows, right? But they're all really small. So we have a lot of feedback from customers about how our boxes are working, and we optimize them in order to do that. But it's also important to have customers that do very few extremely large flows. And that way we can make sure that our boxes are optimized to do that too. And if we didn't have those kind of customers, we wouldn't be getting the kind of feedback that we need to make sure that our products are up to snuff and our design for the next generation of products can handle both millions of small flows and just a few large flows with millions and millions of bytes coming at one time. So it's kind of good for us to have a diverse customer base so we make sure that our boxes are optimized across the board, that we don't become a niche player.
What kind of applications and things do you see on the horizon that are gonna change things for you?
Well, there's a lot of really cool stuff like distance surgery. So before we talked about remote large instrument control, and now there's people doing remote small instrument, if you will, control, doing things like controlling scalpels. And you think to yourself, well, I wouldn't let anyone operate on me over a network, right? What if there's an outage or something? But if you're sitting in a field hospital in a place like Iraq or Afghanistan, where there is no surgeon, there's just the medic, and because there's network connectivity between there and let's say a U.S. military hospital in Germany, a qualified surgeon can try to save your leg instead of having a medic have to amputate it. Then that you're going to quickly say yes, I volunteer for the over the network surgery, right? So we're seeing kind of people trying applications like that. We're seeing a lot of people talk about doing video on demand, and that's really going to pump up the network usage. And so that's going to, I think, cause people to need high bandwidth more than is currently possible. Things like, there's talk about running glass to people's houses and then having 10 gig links to someone's house. And then the applications that come out of that are, you know, some of them you can guess at, things like video on demand, but other things, people will only develop once they get the bandwidth. Or you give people bandwidth, and then these ideas start popping out of the walls.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the history of these prognostications about, you know, what the next big thing is going to be. I mean, I remember all of those TV commercials that someone was running way back when in like the early 90s about, have you ever done XYZ? Well, you will with our network technology. And I don't know that any of those things have come, you know, it's like flying cars kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's this funny chicken and egg problem of, you know, well, we could do all these, we might do X and Y and Z if we had 10 gigs in the home, but it turns out that that's not what we actually want to do. But having that there then enables some other thing. I mean, I can't imagine what I would do with 10 gigs. You know, you could do really high res, you know, movies and, you know, but other than that, I have a hard time imagining.
Right. But some developer will come up with it. It's kind of like oil deep in the ground. If it's there, somebody's going to figure out how to get to it, right? So I'd been working in high-performance supercomputing for, I guess, like 10, 15 years now. And I'd never thought about applications I myself would use if I ever got broadband in my house. But now I have a DSL line, and, you know, we buy our groceries over the internet, and someone delivers them. I use Peapod. Before I get on a flight, I check in over the internet. I'll send big files, like photographs of my kids, to their grandparents. And, you know, these are things I didn't even know I wanted to do, because we could go grocery shopping. I could mail pictures through the Postal Service. And I think these kind of things, if you give people a tool, they'll figure out new and creative ways to use it. And so I think some people say, well, if you build it, they will come. And part of that's true. If you build bandwidth and make it accessible, the applications are going to come. And it's probably a dangerous thing to try to predict what they are. We just kind of wait and find out and benefit from them.
So you said you're responsible for Juniper in the Americas.
For research and education markets in the Americas, right?
What are you seeing south of the U.S.?
There's actually a couple of efforts going on. There's been one that's funded by the National Science Foundation that's been going on for a couple of years that's run out of Florida International University. And there's a point of presence there that connects to different Latin American countries. And they're running like DS3 lines. And now there's another project that's been funded out of Europe by the European Commission to create a network called ALICE that's actually going to connect all the Latin American countries together and then connect them back to Europe and to the States through AMPATH is the point in Miami where the U.S. project has their point of presence. That's the name of the project. So AMPATH is the U.S. reach into Latin America. ALICE is the European reach. One of the good things about the fact that all this bandwidth to these countries has become a lot cheaper, it's given people in Latin American countries something to kind of try to grow up to meet, sort of something to aspire to. So they are able to go to their governments and say, hey, the European Commission or the U.S. is willing to run a line to us for free because that's who's paying for it. But it's not going to be useful to us unless we build our own infrastructure within the country. It's just going to be kind of coming to the coast and then dead ending, right? And then we run a T1 into an OC48 link. That doesn't make sense. So what they've been able to do is get grants from local governments there. So there's a lot of working on in Brazil. There's a network called RNP, which is their national research network. In Argentina, there's a network called Retina. There's actually lines they're talking about dropping to Central American countries, and it's sort of a call to arms for all these people to try to get local resources, and it gives them something to point to, something to write in the grant proposal. If we can get this funding from local government, we're getting matching funding from outside. So there's actually a lot going on. It's just sort of starting to gel. Some of the very early stuff, like networking in Chile, is more advanced because there's big telescopes on top of the mountains in the Andes, right? And so there's U.S. funding and European funding to get to those. And so that infrastructure sort of built up. These other countries, like Brazil and Argentina, which don't have these sort of natural resources that lend themselves to science, are taking a little longer. But because these outside connections are coming in, they're coming up to speed.
I can't think of anything else.
Is there anything you'd like to talk about?
Well, I would like to say a few words about Cynet. We love Cynet. It's a very exciting project for us. We always bring our newest equipment here to run. And for us, it's a really good opportunity because we have a booth here at the conference. We're able to show people, here's equipment that's running, and it's really being baked, right? I mean, there's no better test than to have people move massive amounts of data back and forth between supercomputer centers and the show floor to show your product works. The other great benefit for us is the people that run Cynet, they're volunteers from supercomputer centers and universities all throughout the country, and some of them are actually here internationally from other countries. Those are the people that go home and make the decisions on equipment to buy, like, hey, we need some routers. So it's a great experience for us to be able to have them use our stuff here for a couple weeks every year, and our latest stuff, test it out, see how it performs against the competition, because there's other vendors participating too. And you really can't, you can't buy exposure like that, right? So for us to be able to loan the equipment to Cynet and to help them run the network is really good for Juniper. And I think Cynet as a whole is good for the community because it gives everybody something to look forward to every year and get their applications ready to run on it. It's definitely an exciting show.
All right. Thank you very much. This is JJ, John Jameson, and Ben Eaton. Ben Eater from Juniper Networks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us on.